Malnutrition and starvation among children are on the rise in Gaza.
A nurse here says children sick from malnutrition and a range of other diseases are arriving for care in unprecedented numbers.
Plus, a new UN report finds credible information that Hamas's October 7th attack included sexual violence.
We found clear and convincing information that sexual violence, including rape, sexualized torture, cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment has been committed against captives. And we also have reasonable grounds to believe that such violence may still be ongoing.
And later, an update from Kyiv amid reports that Ukrainian forces have sunk another Russian ship in the Black Sea, and a look at families in Nepal whose sons are fighting in Russia. Today is Tuesday, March 5th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Even as the U.S. and Jordan airdropped more food aid into northern Gaza on Tuesday afternoon, it's nowhere close to enough. Starvation and malnutrition continue to devastate the Gazan population. Palestinian children with sunken eyes and emaciated faces were brought to the Al-Awada Health Center in Rafah. A nurse there said more and more children suffering from malnutrition are being brought by desperate families. Reuters' Ryan Chang has the story.
This was the scene in Al-Awda Health Center in southern Gaza on Monday. A nurse here says children sick from malnutrition and a range of other diseases are arriving for care in unprecedented numbers. This is Ahmed Kanan. His aunt Isra Kalak says he weighs just over 13 pounds, half of his pre-war body weight. This is 12-year-old Yazan Al-Kafana, who died on Monday. Filmed for Reuters on Saturday, he was pale and emaciated with skeletal limbs. Cerebral palsy made him dependent on a special diet of things like blended fruit and milk, items now unavailable in Gaza. The boy's doctor attributed his death to malnutrition. Nearly 5 months into Israel's air and ground assault, acute shortages of food have led to what the United Nations is describing as a nutrition crisis amid the wider humanitarian catastrophe. Gaza's health ministry said on Sunday that 15 children had died of malnutrition or dehydration at Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza, the part of the enclave where the lack of food is most extreme. Reuters obtained this video filmed there on Saturday. It shows Anwar Abdelnabi weeping over the body of her daughter Mila, who had just died in her bed. She said Mila had been suffering from calcium and potassium deficiencies, but did not specify what caused the child's death. Dr. Ahmad Salim works in the hospital's ICU. He says one of the factors in the high number of child deaths was that new mothers were themselves malnourished and could not breastfeed the children. Deliveries of food aid to the whole of Gaza are falling far short of what is needed. The problem is worse in the north because the only crossings where Israel allows trucks to pass are in the south. And some aid trucks have been seized by desperate crowds before they reach the north. In the latest report from UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, it said an average of about 97 trucks a day had been entering Gaza in February, down from about 150 in January. It's well short of the 500 a day target. UN agencies and humanitarian groups have blamed the shortfall on Israel's actions, including the closure of land crossings into northern Gaza. Israel says it does not restrict humanitarian or medical aid and has blamed the lack of deliveries on the capacity of aid agencies.
That's Ryan Chang of Reuters reporting for us. Meanwhile, Scott Anderson, the senior deputy director of the UN Palestinian Refugee Agency, or UNRWA, in Gaza, said on Tuesday that there is enough food in the pipeline for Gaza through the end of July. However, distributing it to people in need is the bigger challenge.
So what I would say is we have food in our pipeline through the end of July. And the key is whether or not we'll be able to pay our staff so that they can actually deliver the food to the people. We are feeding 1.1 million people right now in Gaza.
Anderson says the scale of destruction is unprecedented.
The scale, as I said, is unprecedented. In the north of Gaza, it's nearly 100% destroyed. Parts of Gaza City are destroyed. And in this conflict, all of Gaza has been impacted in a way that it wasn't the case in the previous conflicts that I was here for and experienced. And it's just the scale. You know, 2 million people are displaced, which out of 2.2 million is a lot. Women and children have borne the brunt of it. It was reported that as many as 25,000 to 30,000 people deceased are women and children. And we have over 100,000 people impacted, either through death or through injuries. If you compare that to Ukraine, it's 200,000 after a couple of years. And here, it's only been a few months. So it's just the scale and the speed which happened. And I think most people just find bewildering in Gaza how fast this happened.
And in an effort to reduce that unprecedented level of suffering, Vice President Kamala Harris reiterated her support for an immediate 6-week ceasefire in Gaza. On Monday, she met with a top member of Israel's war cabinet and a top political opponent of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu as the conflict teeters on the 5-month mark. But analysts and protesters note that stopping the conflict hinges on negotiations the Biden administration won't discuss, and that may not yield a deal before the White House's stated deadline, the start of Ramadan. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
Ceasefire, a word that Palestinians have been crying out for months as Israeli strikes target Gaza, may be within reach. Over the weekend, Vice President Kamala Harris became the first Biden administration official to publicly call for Israeli and Hamas forces to lay down arms in the conflict, sparked October 7th when the Palestinian militants launched a killing spree in Israel.
And given the immense scale of suffering in Gaza, there must be an immediate ceasefire for at least the next 6 weeks, which is what is currently on the table.
That deal comes with conditions. On Monday, White House officials told reporters that Hamas is still mulling Israel's proposal, which includes the release of hostages. The administration declined to discuss details of negotiations. But this debate over Gaza's fate is very public. On Monday, as Harris met with a member of Israel's war cabinet, a small clutch of protesters gathered outside the White House to voice their discontent. Mona Sadek is executive director of the American Palestinian Women's Association.
Ceasefire and then for 6 weeks. That's not fair. Ceasefire, ceasefire. Complete ceasefire. Maybe just they want to buy time for the election. This is not it. It's a game. It's a game. We don't buy it.
Analysts say while it's significant that Harris threw her weight behind the critical word, her words may also come with conditions. Trita Parsi is executive vice president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft.
But it's also important to take a look at how she qualified it, because the administration for some time has been saying that they're looking for a ceasefire, but it's within a specific deal that they want that to take place in. If her call is simply a reiteration of that, then the only significance that comes with it is the fact that for the first time, a senior administration official has actually managed to accurately and appropriately express empathy with victims on both sides of the conflict.
And then there is another question, one the White House itself is asking. Will Hamas, which the U.S. has designated as a terror group, take the deal to stop an assault that has killed tens of thousands of civilians? Parsi again.
The demands that have been expressed so far by the administration, which is the release of all hostages in return for a 6-week ceasefire, I find unlikely to be accepted by Hamas, because they're essentially giving up all their leverage for only a temporary end in the fighting rather than a more permanent state. So I think that's going to be a very tricky thing.
Will the smoke clear by the start of the holy month? Or will there be more fire? Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
For his part, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said that an immediate deal is possible, but that it's up to Hamas to accept it.
We have an opportunity for an immediate ceasefire that can bring hostages home that can dramatically increase the amount of humanitarian assistance getting into Palestinians who so desperately need it, and can also set the conditions for an enduring resolution. And it is on Hamas to make decisions about whether it is prepared to engage in that ceasefire.
Blinken also reiterated his calls on Israel to increase the amount of humanitarian aid getting into Gaza.
It's also urgent, irrespective of the ceasefire, to dramatically increase the humanitarian assistance that's getting to people inside of Gaza. The situation for children, for women, for men who are caught in this crossfire Hamas is making inside of Gaza is unacceptable and unsustainable. Israel has to maximize every possible means, every possible method of getting assistance to people who need it. The United States will continue to strongly support those efforts, along with many other countries around the world. But it requires more crossings, it requires more aid getting in, and once that aid is in, it requires making sure it can get to the people who need it. So we will continue to press that every single day because the situation as it stands is simply unacceptable.
Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani, the Qatari prime minister, said that despite setbacks, Qatar will continue to work for peace.
We thank you for all your support and partnership throughout the process of the negotiations of bringing the hostages back and reaching a ceasefire and alleviating the humanitarian situation in Gaza. I just wanted to reiterate in front of you, Mr. Secretary, Qatar, United States, and our partners will be always persistent to make sure that this deal happens, despite whoever is trying to undermine the efforts of bringing peace. We want to bring peace. We want to see an end of the humanitarian suffering. We want to see the hostages back with their families. And hopefully today will present us an opportunity to discuss further in details about the development on that front and on the bigger picture. And of course, ultimately hoping to reach a just solution for the Palestinian people also to get their own state at the end of the day.
And sadly, there is more disturbing news from the area. The October 7th attacks by Hamas on Israel, the event that started this current conflict, allegedly included sexual violence by the Hamas fighters against Israeli civilians. This, according to a UN report released on Monday. It's an accusation the Israelis have been making since the fighting started, but so far has gotten little international attention. Reuters' Diane Toh has more.
A team of United Nations experts reported on Monday there were reasonable grounds to believe sexual violence by Hamas militants, including rape and gang rape, took place during their October 7th attack on Israel. UN Special Envoy for Sexual Violence and Conflict, Pramila Patton, led the team.
In most of these incidents, victims were first subjected to rape and then killed, and at least two incidents relate to the rape of women's corpses.
Patton's group published a 24-page report after visiting Israel earlier this year to verify information gathered on sexual violence linked to the Hamas attack. It described finding credible circumstantial information that pointed to acts such as genital mutilation and sexualized torture. Hamas has repeatedly rejected accusations of sexual violence. But the UN team said evidence showed some of the hostages that militants seized to Gaza had also suffered sexual violence and voiced concern for those who remain there.
We found clear and convincing information that sexual violence, including rape, sexualized torture, cruel, inhuman and degrading treatment, has been committed against captives. And we also have reasonable grounds to believe that such violence may still be ongoing against those still held in captivity.
Here, Patton underlined the need for the war to stop.
I pause and must add that I am of the strong opinion that this finding does not in any way legitimize further violence, but actually reinforces the need for an urgent ceasefire.
Her team said they also received information about sexual violence against Palestinian men and women in Israeli detention centers, during house raids, and at checkpoints after October the 7th. They said they raised the allegations with the Israeli authorities, who responded saying they had received no such complaints against the Israeli Defense Forces. Patton stressed the team's mission in Israel was not investigative in nature and said a fully fledged probe would be required to establish the overall magnitude, scope, and specific attribution for the sexual violence. Their report made several recommendations, including for the Israeli government to grant access to UN and independent agencies for such investigations, as well as to work with the Special Envoy's office on addressing conflict-related sexual violence. They also pressed Hamas to release all those still in captivity while ensuring their protection, including from sexual violence.
That's Diane Toe of Reuters reporting for us today. You're listening to Flashpoint, Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. The story of Nepali mercenaries fighting for Russia coming up in a few minutes. Now, Ukrainian forces have scored another victory in the Black Sea. We get a look at that. And at new developments between Ukraine and the EU with our Kyiv correspondent, Anna Chernikova.
Ukrainian intelligence confirmed the sinking of a Russian ship in the Black Sea in the early hours of March 5th, a patrol boat called the Sergei Kotov. The mission was implemented in cooperation with the Navy and with the support of the Ministry of Digital Transformation. As a result of the attack by Ukrainian-made Magura V-5 marine drones, Sergei Kotov suffered severe damage to the stern on both right and left sides. The cost of the sunken Russian ship is about $65 million. The spokesperson of the Naval Forces of Ukraine, Dmytro Pletenchuk, reported that a Russian helicopter, either a Ka-29 or Ka-27, was also on board the destroyed ship. Russian media reported the missile and drone attack on the temporarily occupied Crimea. The bridge connecting mainland Russia to Crimea was closed for more than 8 hours. Meanwhile, the Deputy Prime Minister for European and Euro-Atlantic Integration of Ukraine, Olga Stefanishyna, said that Ukraine expects that no later than March 12 the European Commission will present a negotiating framework and assess Ukrainian progress in reforms, so that on March 19 EU countries can make a decision on the start of negotiations on Ukraine's accession to the EU. At the same time, the European Commission wants to strengthen the requirements for Ukraine within the framework of a transport visa-free regime. The European Commission said it had decided to change the agreement with Ukraine based on an exchange of views with member states, Ukraine, and stakeholders. A number of changes would make it mandatory to have additional documentation, strengthen control over the compliance of road carriers with their obligations, and add a new protective clause. If there is a significant violation in the national transport market in certain region, the effect of the agreement can be suspended in this region. This may be related to the issue with Poland, where farmers' protests continue and the border with Ukraine is completely blocked. Also, the European Commission presented the first-ever European Defense Industrial Strategy at the EU level, which provides for the close involvement of Ukraine. The strategy outlines the challenges currently facing the European defense technological and industrial base, as well as opportunities to fully exploit its potential and set the direction of development for the next decade. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
And helping fuel Russia's war machine against Ukraine is foreign soldiers and mercenaries. Authorities in Nepal say hundreds of vulnerable Nepalis have been recruited by the Russian military in recent months, with promises of high wages and citizenship. In this report from Kathmandu, a Nepali family tells VOA how their son joined the Russian army as a mercenary after being left destitute in Russia by a scammer. Henry Wilkins has the story.
In this village in the Himalayan foothills, Ganga Dakal Siddharth says that when her son left for Russia in the summer of last year, he had a place at a Russian university lined up. After he arrived, the broker who arranged it stole his money and left him destitute thousands of kilometers from home. The last time Siddharth spoke to 23-year-old Siddharth Dakal, he said he was hungry, had nowhere to stay, and didn't know what to do. Then, in December, a video emerged online of her son, who had been captured by Ukrainian security forces fighting on the side of Russia in Ukraine.
Mum,
Dad, I'm here, he says, assuring them he's okay. He says he doesn't know what will happen to him in the future, but there are many Nepali people in Ukraine, and that he hopes the Nepali government will see this message and come to their rescue. Ganga says she's terrified for her son. She says it's already been 4 or 5 months and she has no idea what has happened to him since seeing the video. She recalls hearing him say in the video, "Please rescue me as fast as you can," and asking her to get help. The Nepali government says hundreds of its citizens have been recruited by Russia as mercenaries and sent to Ukraine to fight. For weeks, it has been asking for Russia to send them back, along with the bodies of several Nepalis killed in Ukraine, so that they can be given burial rites. Nepal is a global hotspot for human trafficking, relatively poor compared to its regional neighbours like Russia, China and India. Many Nepalis are drawn by high salaries to migrate illegally to these countries. Most work in low-skilled jobs, however not as mercenaries. Bikram Mala recently returned from serving with the Russian army in Ukraine. He says he now wants to go back because he needs the money to support his family. He says no one jumps into the fire unless they're forced to. It's all because of money, he says, adding that there's nothing in Nepal and many Nepalis are unemployed. It's better to die there than here because of hunger, he says. He says he paid a broker around $4,000 to help him join the Russian army. The salary he was paid is in a Russian bank account he can't access without returning to Russia. Ganga also says her family is now in debt after they took out a loan believing they were sending their son to college. VOA has reached out to the Ukrainian authorities to establish her son's whereabouts, but has not received a reply. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Kathmandu, Nepal.
And finally today, China kicked off its annual session of parliament Tuesday in Beijing. VOA's Bill Gallo, who attended the event, says Chinese leaders are trying to put a positive spin on the many economic problems they face.
Ambitious economic goals unveiled during the opening of China's ceremonial parliament. It's a chance to project confidence amid a host of challenges. Premier Li Qiang announced an economic growth target of about 5%, matching last year's figure. Li says achieving these targets this year is not an easy task. It requires focused policies, doubled efforts in work, and concerted efforts from all sides. Chinese leaders have overseen some of the country's slowest growth in decades as they deal with a real estate crisis and slowing foreign investment. But at this choreographed meeting, the mood is upbeat as China's political elite endorsed the Communist Party's plans. One of the main goals of this meeting is to reassure foreign investors who have a lot of questions about China's economy. But the lack of a press conference afterwards may leave a lot of those questions unanswered. For decades, China's premier answered media questions at the end of this gathering. Now, that event has been canceled.
It is a window of opportunity for international media to get access to insights by the premier himself. Therefore, the cancellation of the presser became a disappointment for many members of the international media community. In fact, many are shocked.
As he consolidates power, Chinese President Xi Jinping has emphasized national security. That has spooked some foreign companies. But investors will be encouraged if China meets this year's economic growth target. China has also announced it will boost defense spending by about 7%, well above its economic growth target. Later this week, Chinese leaders are expected to discuss foreign policy and other issues amid increased security at Tiananmen Square and across the capital. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Beijing.
And that's going to wrap up today's show. There's more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
Stay up to date with VOA Podcasts. Each weekday, International Edition covers the world's biggest stories, while Flashpoint Iran and Flashpoint Ukraine examine their respective regions in depth every week.